Good morning. On today's programme, a political fallout over how to help unaccompanied children arriving to the Canary Islands from West Africa. And Prague's pragmatic beavers, how one colony saved the Czech taxpayer over €1 million. But first, we look at Greenland and Denmark. Tensions between them are growing ahead of an election on Tuesday. Along with historical grievances, there has been controversy surrounding the documentary Greenland's White Gold, which was aired, then later pulled by the Danish broadcaster DR. Owen O'Sullivan has this report from Copenhagen.
Denmark's relationship with Greenland, an autonomous region with a population of 57,000, has been under the international spotlight in recent months, after the Trump administration once again voiced interest in acquiring it, prompting Greenland to call an election in which independence is high on the agenda. And while Denmark tries to maintain a strong image in response to this external pressure, internally, it struggles to maintain good relations with the territory. In recent years, Denmark apologised for the 1951 child relocation programme, where Greenlandic children were taken to Denmark, causing cultural and emotional trauma. And in January of this year, it ended controversial parenting competency tests for Greenlandic people, criticised for cultural insensitivity and colonial attitudes. And now, a documentary which was aired in early February by DR, the Danish national broadcaster, has added to this already tense time. The documentary, Greenland's White Gold, focused on the mining and sale of a rare mineral, cryolite, from 1854 until it was depleted in 1987. It quotes the finances involved in the mining operation as 400 billion kroner, 54 billion euro. Many viewers at home, as well as the government in Newark, construed this as profit made by Denmark and the mining companies involved. This is in contrast to the narrative Denmark has maintained that it receives no financial gains from its control of Greenland. The Danish government was quick to ask for the information to be clarified. We are in a very big foreign policy crisis between Greenland, the USA and Denmark, and then a documentary is shown that is grossly misleading in many ways, that it borders on misinformation, said Egidde Bauman, the cultural spokesperson for the Conservative People's Party. DR itself then stated that it had doubts about the figures presented. When downplaying the documentary did not placate the public, DR made the decision to pull the documentary, which had been available online, altogether. And on the same day, it announced that DR's news editor-in-chief, Thomas Falbel, was resigning from his position effective immediately. The reason for the decision was cited as an inaccurate graph that had initially been included in the programme. DR stated that two sources in the documentary were interviewed before the graph was removed, so their comments referred to information that had been absent from the final version. However, the damage was already done, and these decisions have, if anything, led to more questions. The controversy has now drawn in the Faroe Islands, another autonomous archipelago in the Kingdom of Denmark, with the Faroese and Greenlandic Filmmakers Trade Association releasing a statement saying, "We see this decision as a violent overreaction that could resemble censorship." And the Greenlandic Prime Minister, Mette Beil, called the removal a pure denial of the essence of the documentary. All of this has been leveraged for the upcoming Greenlandic election on March 11th. While the current pro-independence coalition is likely to remain in power, the upcoming election is significant as it highlights Greenland's push for a more proactive approach to independence and other national concerns. As the Greenlandic Prime Minister stated on social media, "This is a time like we have never experienced in our country. The times oblige us to work together and unite for our country." But even if Greenland does look to move towards independence in the future, its current dependency is significant. Greenland's economy is sustained mainly by fishing and block grants from Denmark. Grants of 4 billion kroner a year, which constitutes half of the annual public budget. Overall, Greenland is an economic expense for Denmark because there is no money flowing the other way, says Jon Rabe Clemensen, an associate professor at the Danish Defence Academy who spoke to DR. There are, of course, other benefits for Denmark controlling the 836,000 square mile territory, as Clemensen also points out. Denmark will be allowed to sit on the Arctic Council. The Arctic is one of Denmark's top priorities for foreign and security policy, and the Arctic Council plays an important role in this strategy. The removal of Greenland's White Gold is seen by many as another misstep in what is becoming an increasingly difficult challenge for Denmark to reconcile its historical treatment of this territory, a territory Denmark sees in its future. But the question remains, what does the future hold for the Greenlandic people themselves? A future they may be taking a step closer to on March 11th. For World News Report in Copenhagen, I'm Owen O'Sullivan.
The Canary Islands continue to face significant challenges due to the high number of migrants who are arriving there from West Africa. Thousands of unaccompanied children are among those hoping to continue to Europe for a better life. Those children have now found themselves at the centre of a political row over where they should be relocated to in Spain. Cliona O'Flynn has this report.
The Canary Islands attract millions of tourists every year to its beautiful beaches and almost 12-month-long guarantee of sunshine. However, the geographic location of the islands, near the equator just off the west coast of Africa, which provides its sunny climate, is also what makes these islands a hugely attractive destination for many escaping financial hardship or political threats. The route by sea from that African west coast is only 100 kilometres. But unfortunately, for many, that short journey is treacherous. Hundreds of migrants die every year as they attempt to reach these islands in small, hugely overcrowded wooden canoes setting off from the west coast of African countries. These lovely, idyllic Canary Islands are relatively small. The largest, Tenerife, is about the size of Kilkenny, or 1/7 the size of Northern Ireland. When tourists fly in, they can see how delightfully tiny the islands are. Yet we welcomed 18 million tourists last year, 7 million to Tenerife. But these visitors come and go. They do have other homes to go to, not, however, the thousands in search of a better life. There are a number of strands to the ongoing crisis. Two stand out. The danger of the crossing, labelled by non-governmental organisations as one of the deadliest in the world, and the huge number of unaccompanied minors, children who are here, who continue to arrive, and who are now at the centre of a political row regarding where they should be relocated to in Spain, if at all. In 2023, the sea route claimed an average of 16 lives a day. Sometimes whole boats are lost at sea. With poor or non-existent navigation systems, their presence never even registering. Some boats have washed up onto the shores of South American countries, dead bodies on board, the authorities reckoning they were trying to reach these islands. These are unsturdy boats called cayucos locally, kayaks, larger than a canoe but not by much, often housing 100 or more squeezed in to face the journey. A report by the NGO Caminando Fronteras said that over 10,000 migrants died or disappeared while trying to reach Spain by sea from January 1st to December 5th, 2024. Caminando Fronteras added that it was a 50% increase from 2023 and the highest toll since its tallies began in 2007, and attributed it to the use of ramshackle boats, dangerous waters, and a lack of resources for rescues. And the thousands who do make it on these boats have little waiting for them, and the capacity of the local authorities to cope with these arrivals is stretched to breaking point. Last year, the smallest of the Canary Islands, El Hierro, with a local resident population of just over 11,000, saw twice that many arrive to its shores, and the boats continue to make the trip. Local authorities struggle to cope. The island has even been labelled as the new Lampedusa. As of February 2025, the Canary Islands continue to face significant challenges due to the high number of unaccompanied minors arriving in these boats. The regional government states it has the capacity to care for only 2,000 minors. Right now, there are almost 6,000 in the overstretched centres. These children arrive without other family members. Sometimes relatives have died making the journey, and the efforts to redistribute them across other Spanish regions have faced political obstacles. As in many of our European neighbours, the rise of the far right and their growing voice in regional governments has bolstered resistance from those bodies to accept what might be a fair distribution of these children. Canarian Regional President Fernando Clavijo is continuing to try and find a workable solution. The Spanish government has allocated 50 million euros to support the Canary Islands in managing the care of the minors, but local authorities and humanitarian organisations stress that further assistance and comprehensive policy reforms are necessary to address the ongoing challenges effectively. Amnesty International has highlighted serious problems with coordination among the various institutions working with unaccompanied migrant children in the Canary Islands. Virginia Alvarez, head of the Research and Internal Policy Area at Amnesty International Spain, says this has grave consequences for the rights of these children while they are minors and, most importantly, when they must face adulthood. We have spoken to children who fear becoming adults because they don't know what will happen to them. the lack of diligence in processing the necessary documentation which would allow minors to leave centres with a residency permit, therefore allowing them to work, is one of the primary concerns for the young men and women. Pierre, a 17-year-old from Cameroon, says, "When you turn 18, you have to fend for yourself. But how are you going to do that if you have nothing? Many boys have to leave the reception centre when they reach adulthood, but they leave with nothing. I am afraid this will happen to me too." He has been in the Canary Islands for 2 years and 2 months after emigrating to help his mother and siblings. His story is mirrored by many who are left in legal limbo. For World Report, this is Cliona O'Flynn in Tenerife.
And finally, Czech taxpayers owe a debt of thanks to a colony of eager beavers after they built a number of dams in the Brody area southwest of Prague. The dams, which were built in just a few weeks, bypassed a human plan to build a similar network that had got fouled up in years of bureaucratic red tape. Rob Cameron reports from Prague.
The Brody region is a sprawling range of wooded hills that was once completely off-limits to civilians. For decades, it's been used as a firing range by the Czech army and even housed S-200 surface-to-air missiles in the Soviet era. Now, however, the army uses a far smaller portion of the Brody, and the protected region is shared with ramblers and wildlife alike. Back in 2018, local officials began work on a plan to revitalise an area along the river Klabava following the soldiers' departure. What they wanted to do was build a dam to shield the Klabava from sediment and acidic water from two nearby ponds. This would have created a nature-rich area of wetland, providing what environmentalists said would be a natural habitat for a number of species, not only the river's population of critically endangered crayfish, but also aquatic insects, fish and amphibians, as well as larger creatures like herons and cranes. But then man intervened. The project ended up the subject of lengthy negotiations between the Military Forest Management Authority and the Vltava River Basin Authority, addressing not only just the projected cost, well over €1 million, but also who would own this patch of land. That was 2018. Fast forward almost 7 years to January 2025, and nature protection officers paying a regular visit to the area were astonished to find that a family of beavers, being beavers, had created the dams themselves, perhaps not overnight, but certainly in a matter of days or weeks, with no need for official paperwork or environmental assessment studies or Excel spreadsheets. Obviously, the beavers were not driven by altruism or a Musk-like commitment to bypassing bureaucracy and cutting costs, nor were they, as strict vegetarians, planning to eat the creatures that found themselves stranded in the deeper water. Beavers build dams to protect themselves from predators, large predators like bears and wolves. Czech scientists are fairly certain there aren't any bears or wolves left in the Brody, though there may be a few lynx. But beavers build dams in areas where there haven't been bears or wolves for centuries. It's hardwired into their DNA. Environmental experts say beavers don't always build dams in the right places. They can, in fact, cause problems for people trying to manage rivers. But Czech taxpayers, at least those in the central Bohemian region, can be grateful as they've just saved them a bit of money and created something in a few days that the local authorities were incapable of managing for more than 6 years. For World Report, this is Rob Cameron in Prague.
That's it from World Report today. The programme was edited by Conor Barons. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/worldreport or find it on all podcast platforms. We'll be back again at the same time next week. So until then, from myself, Gavin O'Callaghan, and all of the team, thanks for listening and take care.